Hello, this is Terry Burdick reading to you from the Danville Commercial News, the weekend edition for Saturday, November 15th and Sunday, November 16th. I can't believe we're already halfway through November. Well, let's start as always on the front page with today's big headline, Jingle All the Way. Holiday season kicks off with Festival of Trees, and this comes to us from reporter Christy Jankowski. While the snow may have melted from earlier this week, Danville is bringing holiday cheer with many holiday events. The Festival of Trees returns this weekend, starting on Saturday and running through Wednesday at the David S. Palmer Arena in Danville. Cassie Keister, Marketing and Media Chair with Festival of Trees, says, "This year we have over 150 trees between 7 foot and 4.5 feet. Keister said, while you are there, get photos with Santa, do crafts in the children's area, or get something hot to drink or eat upstairs from Norris Smokehouse food truck. There is also a tree lighting ceremony downtown on Saturday. Both Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. and Raina Alles with the city are looking forward to welcoming in the season. I've been going since, honestly, my grandparents took me," Alles said about the Festival of Trees. "I think this is their 29th year and I'm 23, so it's literally been going on longer than I've been alive." Local businesses sponsor trees at the festival and decorate them according to different themes. "I volunteered every year for all 29 years," Keister said about how she got involved. "I volunteered there for the last couple of years, and it's just amazing seeing the little kids' eyes sparkle when they see the trees," Alice added. "It's through a group of friends, and over the course of the years, the friends here have become like family," Keister said. "We have several volunteers, and they truly make it work." For Alice, the festival and the lighting ceremony are just a part of Danville. "We're thankful for the Festival of Trees and Balloons over Vermilion for the work they put into it. It's been a long-standing tradition at this point," Alice said. Keister added, "I think it's breathtaking, and it truly gets you in the holiday spirit. If you bring a canned good item to the tree lighting ceremony on Saturday, you can get into the Festival of Trees for free. It's become a family and community tradition, whether it's just you or your friends or you and your family," Williams said. "It's a place where everyone can gather and gain some holiday cheer." While Williams loves the lights now, he said he wasn't always filled with holiday cheer. "They used to call me the Grinch because I used to vote against buying more Christmas lights, and the reason I did was back then when I was an alderman, the city was in a tough financial constraints," Williams said. "And so I thought, although Christmas lights are nice, if you don't have the money to take care of the things that you should be taking care of, how are we paying for this?" Williams said they haven't been in any recent issues with affording lighting, so he thanked the city team for their help in being good stewards. Danville Public Works team members install the lights each year. Williams said they do a walkthrough with him to make sure all the lights are good to go. As for this year, Williams said of the decorations, "There are a couple of new items this year, and I think people are going to love, so I hope I'm right. And the lighting ceremony is one you have to witness," according to Williams. "Basically, what we do is we have our team on walkie-talkies. It's completely dark downtown. We turn off all the lights," Williams said. "And then we turn them all on, the Christmas lights, simultaneously, and it's pretty cool." Alice added that the event makes people more aware of their surroundings and not their phones. "I think it's the energy. I think it's the positive, joy-filled, happy energy. Well, people aren't too tired from the holiday season yet. You're not exhausted, but they're excited that it's the holiday season," she said. "No one is on their phones. Everyone is involved in the moment." Well, welcome to the holiday season. I hope some of you made it down to see the tree lighting and have the opportunity to enjoy the Festival of Trees. Continuing with a holiday theme, donations needed at Project Success, again by Christy Jankowski. Project Success is making sure children in Vermilion County have presents this holiday season. The children they serve are not being served by any other organization in the county. We are their only hope to help provide them with winter clothing first and foremost, and if donations allow, toys or miscellaneous needs, said Kimberly David with Project Success. "These are all kids we serve through one of our programs, so our families we work with directly every day," David said. "The community really pulls together for this, and without them, we wouldn't be able to do it. And this year is hitting hard for families who are already struggling," she said. "We have families dealing with food shortages this year, so we're doing food baskets." She added that they want to give out Christmas baskets for those on their wish list as well. The organization has been spreading cheer for those in need for 25 years, and they are still in need of community support to check off all the items of their list. As of Friday afternoon, they're still in need of gifts for 37 children, as well as coats and other items like wrapping paper, gift boxes, books, hygiene items, and more. You can find an updated list on their Project Success of Vermilion County, Inc. Facebook page. The past 25 years have been a tremendous success, and we've been very blessed with support from our community, David wrote. We thank you in advance for helping those less fortunate, and happy holidays. David said they serve over 1,500 children annually within Vermilion County. They've been serving children and families in the area since 1998. If you have any questions, contact Kimberly David or Abby Bone at 217-446-3200, or you can email them at kdavid@vcprojectsuccess.org or abowen, B-O-E-N, at vcprojectsuccess.org. The ladies will help you select a child's needs to prevent duplication. They ask that anything donated be a new item and that you mark the item with your child's number. Monetary donations are also accepted. There's a donate tab on their website to donate virtually at www.vcprojectsuccess.org. Donations for gifts will be taken until December 4th at 5 p.m., while monetary donations are accepted year-round. In other news for helping a local child, benefits set for terminal cancer patient. At 27 years old, Lyric Hicks found out news that would forever change her life after she was diagnosed with a neuroendocrine tumor. It's actually like they think it started in my pancreatic tail. It's moved to my liver, my lymph nodes, and spine, Hicks said about her diagnosis. Initially, I had gone to the emergency room because I woke up one night with extreme pain in my side, like I could barely walk or stand. And I couldn't do anything without it hurting, so I went to the ER. Hicks, who's now 29, said the doctors and nurses did what you might have expected, addressed the pain and used medical tools to see what was causing her pain. And in the ER, they gave me medicine to calm it down and took me for a computerized tomography or CAT scan. And after the doctor came in, he was like, "You have a liver mass," Hicks said. And he told me from there it could be cancer, but we're not for sure. She said following that, she went to Carle Hospital for biopsies and scans, which were sent to Mayo Clinic, and that is where she confirmed she had cancer. Hicks said she had maybe a few symptoms, but nothing extreme until her ER visit. "I would say I was throwing up if I was doing car rides or really early in the morning I was getting sick, but I didn't think that was anything out of the normal. It was once in a blue moon." When she was initially diagnosed, Hicks said her medical team was going to remove the cancer, but they ended up not being able to. "My first treatment didn't work, so it was off the table after that because it had grown too much," Hicks said. "They pretty much told me that what they were going to do is to prolong my life. They told me I would never be cured or in remission. With that, life changed," Hicks said. "It's kind of, I have good days and bad days. A lot of the time I'm just tired, and I have pains here and there," Hicks said. "I see so many doctors now, it's ridiculous, going from not seeing a doctor maybe once a year, if that, to seeing them at least once a month now. It's a big change." Her back will hurt, she said, or she'll get fatigued quickly, much faster than most 29-year-olds. While Hicks' cancer is terminal, she still has hope. "Right now I'm going through a recently approved treatment. It's a chemo pill," Hicks said. "It's just trial and error to see what's going to work for me and what is not going to." They said they don't really have a time limit for me, especially since I just started a new treatment. They don't know how it's going to affect me. Before her current treatments, she said she did one in Chicago that just wiped her out every time she went. "While it was going on, you just feel nasty and sick, and after that, you're not able to be around anybody. That was supposed to be the most promising treatment that they have for me. It worked while I was on it." Hicks said, however, it didn't last. After it was over, they did 3 months of no treatment. "It's supposed to stay and last in your system for over a year. I didn't even make it to my three-month checkup. I ended up back in the ER with pains again, and then the ER told me I needed to get with my doctor in Chicago to get the scans. It's grown even more in that time I was off treatment," Hicks said, following an attempt that didn't work. She said the tumor in her liver goes all the way into her pelvis and along to the other side. It's massive. "All of this is incredibly painful, so she has palliative care to help manage her pain. I do a lot of resting and lying down, obviously. If it's hurting really bad, I'm not going to eat because it plays into that," she said about how the cancer impacts her day-to-day life. Hicks stressed living your life to the fullest. She said, "Do all the things you want to do. Go to that concert. Go to that party. Go have time with your family. The small things in life. The people that make you mad, the silly arguments, it's just not worth it. Because in the end, all you're going to have is your family and friends supporting you. There's so much to see in the world," she added. "The only thing I would definitely say is do it, get out of the country, go see the world." Her cancer is terminal, so how she wants to be remembered is something that's crossed her mind. That's what I want to be known for. Lyric was so kind, she said. Lyric was always the person to go to talk to when you needed someone or help or someone to talk to. She's also aware of how tough it is on her family, especially her mother, taking her to the doctor appointments and going through treatments by her side. Everybody comes to the end of their life at some point, and I'd say that is the one thing that when this illness does take over and I've come to the end of my life, I never want it to hurt anybody else, Hicks continued. I don't want people sitting there crying in the whole nine. I know it's a sad time, but it's something that you have to accept. All proceeds from the benefit will go to Lyric's medical expenses. The benefit is being held at the Westville Legion on Saturday, November 22nd from 3 to 7 p.m. with a silent auction and food. Hicks said the leftover food will go to the homeless in the area. Well, continuing along with our theme of kindness, local students display kindness, again by Christy Jankowski. Spreading positivity with a cup of coffee. Local second graders at Liberty Elementary School celebrated World Kindness Day by giving back in a colorful, positive way. Second grade teacher Destiny Dye said her class joined Mad Coat Coffee to uplift others in the community by decorating 140 coffee sleeves filled with positive affirmations, Dye said. Mad Goat Coffee proudly displayed all the sleeves for customers, helping my students reach the people in our community. Some of her students shared their messages about the project and what kindness means to them. Kindness means making people feel happy, said Jewel Turner. I like decorating the sleeves because someone drinking coffee will smile when they read it, said Latia Glover Palmer. Kindness is using nice words even if you don't know the person, said Kajai Bright. I felt good because we made somebody's day better, said Oliver Bryant. Kindness means being a good friend and showing love, said Felicity Coleman and Bay and Cade. Sharman Academy also got in on celebrating World Kindness Day with a food drive. Advancement team leader Jennifer O'Brien and interim principal Tracy Cherry said the drive showed community spirit and generosity. The school-wide initiative collected over 1,000 food items, which will be donated to local Danville food pantries to assist those in need during the holiday season, Cherry said. The event highlights Schlarman's commitment to fostering compassion and community service among students. The food donations will support local members facing food insecurity, emphasizing the positive impact of collective kindness. Schlarman Academy is a private Catholic school in Danville. Let's broaden our look at education and take a look at an article that has some state at the state level. Union and students rally for higher education funding. This comes to us from Peter Hancock at the Capital News, Illinois. Dateline Springfield. University students and faculty urge the Illinois Board of Higher Education to press Governor J.B. Pritzker to release more than $29 million in funding for state colleges and universities that state lawmakers approved this year, but the Pritzker administration is holding back. But the governor's office said in an email to Capital News, Illinois, that it doesn't intend to release the state-approved funding until it sees stability on federal education policy coming from Washington. President Trump's budget bill and reckless tariffs have wreaked havoc on state revenues nationwide, making it essential to double down on fiscal discipline, a spokesman at the governor's office said. Advocates for releasing the fund spoke Wednesday during the public comment portion of an IBHE business meeting held on the campus of Elgin Community College in Kane County. They included faculty members from nearby universities who were members of University Professionals of Illinois, a collective bargaining unit within the Illinois Federation of Teachers that represents about 3,000 employees across 8 public university campuses in the state. In addition to calling for release of the $29 million, advocates also called on the IBHE board to endorse legislation that would overhaul funding of the state's higher education system, putting it on a needs-based formula similar to the evidence-based funding formula used for grades K-12 education. Years of underfunding by the state have forced most Illinois public universities to increase tuition, cut programs, and reduce staff, said UPI Vice President Keith Nyquist, a business instructor at Northern Illinois University. We have to look no further and what's been going on at Western Illinois University and most recently at Eastern Illinois University, where dozens and dozens of staff and faculty have had their positions terminated, and they're on their way out because of this lack of funding. Money held back. In his budget proposal to the General Assembly in February, Pritzker proposed a 3% increase in higher education funding, but the $55.3 billion budget bill that lawmakers approved in May contained only a 1% increase, with an additional 2%, or $29.5 million, that could be distributed only after the purpose and amounts have been approved in writing by the governor. Democratic leaders in the General Assembly said at the time the money was intended to be used if there were significant cuts in federal higher education spending. But in its statement this week, the governor's office said it was always Pritzker's intent to hold the money back as a cushion against uncertainties caused by the Trump administration. When the budget was approved by the legislature and signed, the governor was clear that a 2% reserve would remain in place until we saw stability on education from Washington, which has yet to materialize, the statement read. In addition to holding back the higher education funding, Pritzker issued an executive order in September directing executive branch agencies to make plans to hold back as much as 4% of their budgets this year. The IBHE and Illinois Community College Board were not subject to that order. Kimberly Britt, a junior psychology major at Chicago State University, said that for her, as well as many students and teachers at campuses across the state, the issue was not about national politics. The 2% being withheld might seem small on paper, but its impact is immense, she said. It determines whether a student can stay enrolled, whether a professor can continue teaching full-time, and whether Chicago State can continue being the beacon of opportunity it's been for generations. New funding formula. In addition to calling for release of the funds, several of the advocates who spoke Wednesday called for IBHE to openly support overhauling the way higher education funding is allocated among the state's public universities. Of the $29.5 million that Pritzker is holding in reserve, the largest portion, $12.9 million, is earmarked for the University of Illinois system, which includes campuses in Urbana-Champaign, Chicago, and Springfield. The rest would be divided among the state's 8 other public university systems, the Illinois Community College Board, and City Colleges of Chicago. That distribution formula would change dramatically under legislation that was introduced earlier this year, which did not pass out of a key legislative committee, largely due to opposition from U of I. That legislation, Senate Bill 13 and House Bill 1581, known as the Adequate and Equitable Public University Funding Act, would establish a new formula that would set an adequacy target for each university and then direct the bulk of any new funding approved by the General Assembly, the proposal calls for $1.7 billion over 10 to 15 years, to those institutions furthest away from their targets. Under that formula, Western Illinois University would be first in line for any new funds because it's currently funded at only 46% of adequacy. The U of I's Urbana-Champaign campus, which is currently funded at 89% of adequacy, would be last in line. The board's silence on the legislation aimed at addressing higher ed's desperate and immediate need for adequate and equitable funding is deafening, said Christopher Merchant, an associate psychology professor at Northeastern Illinois University and a UPI member. As more and more political leaders abandon colleges and universities out of political convenience or malice or both, this board's absence of support gets thrown into more and more stark relief. Merchant said, "How do we secure a pathway to the future for our students if nobody is willing to fight the fights that matter on their behalf?" The advocacy group Advance Illinois, which is a strong proponent of the proposed new funding formula, has said it intends to continue pushing for the legislation in the 2026 session. We're a little bit past that midtime of our time together today, and we are going to stop and take a look at obituaries that were received in the news office by Friday evening. Today we have two. From Danville, Blanche Marie Springer, age 85, of Danville, passed away on Wednesday, November 12th at Hawthorne Inn of Danville. The family would like to extend a special thanks to Blanche's home caregivers, Hawthorne Memory Care, and Traditions Help for all of the special care they provided. A memorial service to celebrate the life of Blanche Springer will be held at 11 a.m. on Saturday, November 22nd at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center on Vermilion Street in Danville. 11 a.m. prior to the service on Saturday, also at Sunset Danville. Let's try that again. Interment will be at Sunset Memorial Park in Danville following cremation. Visitation will be held from 10 to 11 a.m. prior to the service on Saturday, also at Sunset in Danville. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the DAC Scholarship Foundation in honor of the Joe Springer Memorial Scholarship or Central Christian Church in Danville. From Georgetown, we have Wilma Hill Pullman. Wilma Hill Pullman, age 90 of Georgetown, passed away on Tuesday, November 11th. Visitation will be held on Sunday, November 16th from 2 to 5 p.m. A service at 11 a.m. on Monday, the 17th at Sunset Houghton Leisure Funeral Home Chapel in Georgetown will be the final service for Wilma Hill Pullman. That concludes our death notices for this week. Continuing with news of the state, SNAP benefits to resume this month by Maggie Dougherty. The Illinois Department of Human Services announced Thursday that residents who received partial or delayed SNAP funds in November will be receiving full benefits for the month. In Illinois, nearly 1.9 million people rely on SNAP benefits to buy groceries. Illinois recipients are expected to see their full benefits by November 20th, according to IDHS. On Sunday, U.S. Senator Dick Durbin and seven other Senate Democrats broke rank to vote alongside Republicans to pass a budget bill and reopen the federal government after a record 43-day shutdown caused an unprecedented lapse in Supplemental Nutrition and Assistance Program funding. After 3 weeks of whirlwind lawsuits, appeals, and a proposal by the Trump administration to provide only partial benefits, the government reopening means states can now release outstanding November benefits. The crisis was entirely avoidable, IDHS said in a statement. The Trump administration had the funding to fully support SNAP but chose not to, putting tens of millions of Americans at risk of hunger. Lily Simpson, 21, is a substitute elementary school teacher in Carbondale. Simpson, who relies on SNAP for groceries, said the uncertainty around the timing of benefits made it difficult to plan her shopping. When they don't tell you the previous month that it's going to be cut, it's hard to budget that way, Simpson said. We already don't have a lot to work with. But the SNAP, it really is just the extra cushion every month for us. Simpson, who usually receives $158 in SNAP benefits on the first of the month, said her first payment came on November 7th was only $12. The next day she got $38 more. Now she said she can see the rest pending in her account. Though Simpson signed up for text alerts about the status of her benefits, she said there had been no communication about the new deposit since the first one. She was only notified to check her account from a friend's suggestion. Well, let's turn our attention to the editorial page. It's been a while since we've heard from our friend Kevin Cullen, the Irish hiker. Let's take a look at what he has to say today. His headline for his column today is How Times Have Changed for Danville. Exchanging emails with a high school pal recently, I was surprised when he said he would give anything to spend a day, just one day, in Danville as it was 100 years ago. An impossible dream, of course, but boy, what an intriguing one. The 1920s in many ways formed the golden age for Danville and many other can-do, let's-go, blue-collar Midwestern cities. Danville prided itself on being a growing, progressive, future-oriented market town. The 900-member Chamber of Commerce liked to call it the city that does things. And at about the same time, I suspect the commercial news began calling itself the paper that does things, a motto carved into its limestone portal on North Street. Danville's population grew by 44% between 1920 and 1928, and many civic boosters fixed their sights on soon living in the city of 100,000. Everywhere you looked, new schools, homes, factories, and business buildings were being built as local coal fields, brickyards, and railroad-related enterprises boomed. Everyone was in awe of the million-dollar high school, the elegant Hotel Wolford, the stately Illinois National Guard Armory, and other new landmarks. Lake Vermilion, created by damming the North Fork of the Vermilion River and flooding its valley, was formed in 1925. It provided new opportunities for recreation, industry, and residential growth. Danville was more than a county seat. It was home to a federal courthouse and a federal retirement home for disabled veterans. Then and now, Danville stood amid some of the world's best farmland, making it the chief market for miles around. Nature offered cheap coal and clay. Mines and brickyards employed thousands, including many immigrants. Coal fueled locomotives, railroad shops, machine shops, foundries, and kilns. It generated electricity and heated homes, factories, and commercial buildings. Dozens of passenger and freight trains stopped in Danville daily, and the city was the hub for the first system of hard roads in the state, including two vital highways. Years ago, someone sent me a copy of the May 1924 issue of Current Topics, published by the Illinois Power and Light Corporation. A cover story titled The Danville of Tomorrow detailed a sweeping city plan that eventually fizzled. At that time, Myron H. West, head of the American Park Builders Association, was city planner. His ambitious Danville plan called for a boulevard encircling the new lake, a connecting parkway that followed Stony Creek, construction of a combination City Hall Civic Center on Harrison Street between Vermilion and Hazel, the widening of major city streets, the passage of a zoning ordinance, construction of a central railroad station, the elimination of railroad grade crossings, and the addition of 2,000 acres of parkland, much of it with lake access. These were only a few of the many proposed improvements, the magazine said. It will, of course, take time to perfect all of them, but Danville has never yet fallen down on an undertaking. The article closed on a fun note. Possessing unlimited possibilities, who knows, but that our expansion may be so great in a few years that we may have to annex Chicago as a suburb. And birdmen from the west flying this way will think they've reached New York when they look down on Danville. Such were the hopes of Danville a century ago. Thank you, Kevin Cullen. Well, it looks like we still have some teams in our local area in the high school football scene that are still active at this part of their season, so that's exciting. Today's headline says, High School Football Halfway There, Westville Takes on Undefeated ALAH, by Marvin Holman. After strong wins in the first two rounds, the Westville football team is at the halfway point of the IHSA Class 2A state championship game, which means the competition will only get tougher. The second half of the title journey is on Saturday when the 11-0 Tigers will take on Arthur Lovington at Wood Hammond, which is also 11-0. You have a matchup of two undefeated teams, and it should be a good ball game, Westville head coach Guy Goodlove said. We watched Arthur on tape, and they do a lot of things well. They run the wing T like us, and they spread the field like we do. They can run the ball and pass the ball well, so they're a very difficult team to stop offensively. They have a good defense, and their kids fly around, so instead of one or two guys, you may get a gang tackling situation. They are senior dominated, and I am sure it is going to be a physical game because they don't want it to be their last game, and we don't want that either. They're big and fast, and we're coming with our heads screwed on tight, and we are ready to play, Westville senior offensive lineman Ethan Smith said. They have a lot of funky formations in the backfield, so they have a lot of fakes and stuff we have to focus on. We can't go to the wrong side of the field, and they have some great pass catches, so our pass coverage has to be great. The Tigers will be without wide receiver defensive back Landon Kuhn, who was injured in last week's 49-13 win over DeCoin. Was he our top receiver, but he returned punts, kickoffs, and one of our best defensive backs, Goodlove said. So we lost a lot when Landon went down, but fortunately we have guys who can step up and make plays. We're looking at Matt Darling at 6'3" at wide receiver, and Chaz Alvarez, who is 6'2". They're both very fast with great hands. We have Easton Barney and Lincoln Cravens that can return punts and kicks. Injuries are part of the game, and it breaks my heart because Landon has been with us for 4 years and puts his heart and soul into the program, and I wish it didn't happen. The best thing we can do for him is to keep winning. I think Landon going out scared us at first, but we bounced back and made the adjustments we needed, Westville quarterback Easton Boland said. I still have a ton of faith in my other guys. Losing Kuhn hurts, but at the same time, we have a lot of work. We have a lot to work with here. While he didn't get to pass much, Boland still made his presence known with two interceptions of DeCoin's Jonathan Brown, including one in the end zone that would lead to the Tigers piling on the points in the third quarter. The play before that, the end zone interception, I saw him do an out, and I thought he was going to throw it out of the end zone, and I was like, this is my chance for something good, Boland said. We got the ball, and we were able to hold on to it. Easton's a great athlete. He's the fastest kid on the field for us, Goodlove said. He is good quarterback, solid defensive back, and he will have to pick up where Landon left off and defend their best receiver. He has a lot of athletic ability, and when you have that, we expect you to make plays. He always seems to be around the ball, and he always puts himself in a great position to make plays, and we hope we can have that again on Saturday. Well, for those of you from Westville and listening, you do know the outcome of this game. I'm going to have to wait to find out. I'm sure the kids played a great one. We'll wrap up our time together taking a peek at the NFL. Patient Bears traveled to Minnesota, and this comes to us from Dave Campbell, an AP Pro football writer. Caleb Williams and the Chicago Bears have produced this season yet another example of how good things can indeed come to the hyper-competitive, super-scrutinized NFL for those willing to wait. The Minnesota Vikings are in the thick of their test of patience just 4 games in with J.J. McCarthy. After McCarthy carried the Vikings to a comeback victory in the opener at Chicago with a lead record 3 fourth quarter touchdowns by a quarterback in his debut, he sprained his ankle during the following week. The pause button on his development had to be pushed for 5 more games after knee surgery kept him out his entire rookie year. McCarthy's latest return has predictably been up and down. He'll aim to stay unbeaten against NFC North opponents when the Vikings 4-5 host the Bears 6-3 on Sunday. The magnitude of every single game in the NFL, all the intense attention on every single week, it's a lot. Young guys can get wrapped up in that emotional roller coaster, and I'd be lying to you if I just said it didn't matter at some point, said McCarthy. Well, I don't know who won that one either. But I suppose being in Illinois, I should be saying go Bears. Well, this brings us to the end today together. It looks like we're in for a great week of real fall weather this week. This has been Terry Burdick reading to you from the Commercial News. I look forward to reading with you again soon. Have a great week.